time now for Outsiders. I'm Barry Cassidy and you're not.
Indeed it is, and your Outsiders for this morning are Guardian Australia journalist Bridie Jabbour, writer and social commentator Monica Dux, and we had hoped to have with us economist and commentator Judith Sloan. Judith, sadly, and you may be out there, Judith, pedalling or driving with haste towards us, and we wish you every good fortune in that endeavour. Your seat is waiting should you arrive. Good morning, though, Bridie and Monica.
Good morning, Jonathan.
Here good morning, are. Jonathan. Lovely to be with you.
Yeah, well, thank you both for your attentiveness and presence. Well. What a rotten week it has been for Kelly O'Dwyer, Sharman Stone, and several others.
I'm obviously disappointed that there aren't more women in cabinet. And if Sophie Mirabella had been clearly ahead in Indi, Sophie would be in the cabinet.
The cabinet of Afghanistan now has more women in it than the cabinet of Australia.
Tony Abbott is really putting the man back into mandate.
Well, if nothing else, the composition of the federal cabinet gave some good lines to the opponents of Tony Abbott. Monica Dux?
Yeah, there was actually a very funny, that junkie website. They had things that have more women in them than Tony Abbott's cabinet, and it included Gaddafi's personal guard and Zoo Weekly's staff meeting. And it was quite an extensive list, including also his family, and the dog was gendered as female. So,
Well, that's an important, I mean, from a family of women.
Yes, you need a female dog. Yeah, there was, it did provide much mirth this week. I was actually most amused by The Guardian headline this week that unnamed coalition sources blamed the lack of women in cabinet on Cathy McGowan.
The story was amazing. And it was also her fault. There's no science minister.
Exactly, that's yes. Right. And then we all thought, oh, there you go. I thought it was, you know, ingrained in systemic sexism, but obviously I was completely wrong.
But the line actually was used, wasn't it, Bridie? We heard Tony Abbott saying, if only the electors of Indi had got it right, we wouldn't have this problem. There'd be nothing to talk about.
As if two women in cabinet would be enough. Well, I guess it would be double the number that is now. But even then, I think there would still be an issue. I kept thinking this week, actually, seeing the cabinet sworn in and seeing everyone talking about the lack of women, I kept thinking that Julie Gillard's blue tie speech would be so powerful right now if she hadn't said the silly blue tie line and been completely lampooned at the time. But to look back on what she was saying then, you know, it's all come true. She was right.
It certainly seemed it stood the test of time.
I wondered too if the Governor-General was sending a subliminal message wearing hot pink.
Yeah, a lot of fuchsia in the room for the Governor-General.
Just to point out where the women are in case you missed them.
Here, this is what they look like, indeed. I mean, but this is the thing, though. I mean, yes, there's concern about the balance, and that's an important aspect. But Monica, there's, you know, the claim from Tony Abbott that it's a meritocracy, looks a little thin. I mean, we look at some of the women I mentioned before, Sharman Stone and Kelly O'Dwyer, as a couple of examples of extremely capable performers.
Yeah, I mean, and there's been a lot of commentary this week saying there actually were women who could have been in cabinet quite easily. And I always think when the merit argument comes out, it's a bit like, it's a bit like naming Hitler in an argument. You lose the argument, I think, when you're dealing with these kind of things, because it's not a meritocracy. It's clearly a system that disadvantages women.
I'd just like to point out in this discussion, you just mentioned Hitler.
I know, therefore I lose the...
Yes.
it's like a self-defeating. So the logic is kind of completed. But no, I mean, the use of merit is just false. I think what I was so appalled by was his easy dismissal of the whole situation. It's not all Tony Abbott's fault. It's not all Tony Abbott's fault. It's a systemic problem. And it is something that the Liberal Party hasn't dealt with for many years. And since the 90s, they've been pretty crap when it comes to pre-selecting women. And actually, Tony Abbott's had plenty of time to nurture women in the last few years if he thought that they weren't capable of being on his cabinet.
Annabelle Crabb this morning, Bridie, writes rather nicely about this issue and points to the fact that a male who abandons his children for 18 weeks of the year is seen to be doing a good job, but a woman who does it is a hell crone. This, you know, is an issue for women of serious intent wanting to advance their political career.
I'm not sure that is. Well, it's interesting you said that. Remember Bob Ellis when they were talking about the Labor leadership and mentioned that Tanya Plibersek won't run because she's got a toddler, and Bill Shorten's got a child the same age. So I think I'm not sure if of course it's an issue for the women in Parliament, but trying to juggle all of that, and I'm sure it's an issue for the men too, but I think it's more about a perception outside that, Yeah, Annabelle was right, I guess. It's the perception that the women are leaving their children at home and, you know, it's fine for the men to go to work and do it.
But, I mean, the Labor Party introducing quotas in the 90s has made a huge difference on women getting pre-selected and the lineup in the Labor Party. And I think even this idea of, okay, there are things that hold women back, but there are ways that you can actually address that. And, yeah, I mean, 2013, to have one woman in 19, you know, out of 19 in cabinet is just unbelievable.
I mean, people argue against quotas, but to look at that thing is 2013, one woman. Well,
what are you going to do?
You need to do something fairly
dramatic.
Exactly,
and I think this is one of the arguments against quotas is often, oh, it's all unfair and et cetera. And I don't agree with that at all because I think we've waited so long. Women are meant to be an equal part of public life and they're not there. And you know, quotas actually do work and it's not a perfect system using quotas, but it actually does make a difference. And if Tony Abbott had stood up the other day and said, we're going to look into this, we're going to try and provide some other way of fixing this problem, then maybe it wouldn't have felt so cynical. But you know, it's internationally embarrassing.
And it was pretty much brushed aside at the time. And Bridie, you were keen to jump in just before then.
Well, the quotas, people can be so against quotas, and I always find it a bit strange because they have quotas for states in cabinet. Like when you have your government, there will be a certain number of people from WA and a certain number of people from Queensland, so those states can be represented properly.
Quotas
and people
for
seem to have no problem with that.
Well.
Oh, that's a bit more behind closed doors, I guess, although it's coming more to the surface. But, yeah, people really argue against quotas for women, but anything that's going to get more representation for half of the population, I think, can only mostly be a good thing.
The other point on this, and Monica, you hinted at it then as well, was the way in which this issue was dealt with earlier this week was to dismiss it, to move on, nothing to see here. But which is indicative, I think, of a more broad approach from this new government, that it's not, especially by comparison with the last two, as obsessive about its media appearance.
No, he's really changed gear, hasn't he? And it's kind of a strange new Tony Abbott that we're witnessing, where he is going silent. And he actually stated the other day that he's not going to say anything unless it's worth saying. I would say some of the things he said this week are not worth saying, but he shouldn't have said them in the first place. But, you know, he is, I think it's that fear and that reaction against that 24-hour news cycle that was constantly being fed by the Labor Party and in part probably contributed to some of their undoing. But it will be interesting to see what happens because I think that beast, the media beast, will still be there whether he's quiet or not. And
it's so, been used to having him every day at a new small business in a new hard hat and a new high-vis vest. This is a real change of profile.
And whether that works or not, I think it's that thing when you know, coming into office, there's that moment of this is how we would like to run the government, but it will be very interesting to see if that starts to unravel. I mean, if we remember, Gillard had the same kind of desire when she came in a few years ago, and then Tony Abbott was at her so much that she ended up getting back into that news cycle. And it's that the monster, the media, is not going to go away because he remains silent.
I mean, it's an interesting thing, Bridie. There's been so much media hype around politics now for the past few years. It's been so much a part of the daily media diet. Can the media just switch off and go and do something else?
Well, even looking at the papers of the last couple of weeks, especially this weekend's papers and last weekend papers, I was astounded at how much politics had shrunk in them, and there was more police stuff, there was a little bit more social issues stuff. But it seemed in the past couple of weeks that there has been a pullback from the politics, and I think for the moment it's a smart strategy from Tony Abbott, because during the election campaign there was a lot of commentary and a lot of people saying to me, colleagues, journalists, as well as, you know, my friends that aren't journalists, saying it's such a boring campaign, it's not that interesting. Well, one, there wasn't a lot of money to spend, but two, we'd had a 3-year campaign and people are just exhausted. So I think for the moment this strategy is clever and this strategy is working, but yeah, the 24-hour beast is still there, and once Labor have a proper leader and these elections are done and they've got an opposition leader who can be up every day hammering the issues of the day, and if we're getting silence from Tony Abbott, I think it could start to work against him.
There's a great opportunity, though, there isn't there, Monica, for a government if there's a population which is, as Bridie suggests, a bit jaded after 3 years of the constant campaign.
Yeah, but how long that will actually last. And also, I think that it can easily breed a sense of distrust. And you see yesterday with the breaking of the story that Scott Morrison now is withholding information about boat arrivals. Liberals, and he's now going to be in control of that. And, you know, there's a fine line between looking like they're being dignified and only speaking when they need to speak and withholding information or being a bit sneaky.
But the other way to interpret that, Andrew Bolt wrote on this past week too, that the government of Kevin Rudd in particular, and Julia Gillard too, was a lot about cultivating impression, a lot about playing the media in terms of giving the good perception of what you're doing rather than the reality. Are we seeing here what it looks like when the government just doesn't care about that and just gets on and does stuff?
I think they care very much. I mean, what they probably care about is being seen to look more authentic and being seen to look more like
the perception of not caring about perception.
Exactly. I think that's right, because I think that sense of that media spin people were very exhausted with, and it does make the politician, but even at his swearing in, I thought it was very strange. Abbott brought in the "we will stop the boats, we will, you know, get rid of the carbon tax."
And on message.
On message, yeah. And he actually repeated that a few times that day. And I think there's a very interesting study about clichés and how a cliché, when you read it on the page, you can't even see. It loses so much more meaning. You can't hear what the message actually is. And he's still repeating these mantras, and it's dead space, really.
That's an interesting thing, Bridie. I mean, as much as there's been the change of gear from Tony Abbott, there is, as Monica says, there's this constancy. It's pretty much the same guy presenting the same message, just with a little less intensity.
Yeah, and that "we will stop the boats" message maybe should have been "we will stop telling you about the boats."
We've also stopped the climate. That's the development of the past week as well.
It was funny when there was leadership change between Julia Gillard and Kevin Rudd, and it looked like, and Tony Abbott did look a little bit uncertain on his feet at the time, he didn't change his strategy. And I remember thinking at the time, you need to change your strategy for a new leader. You need to switch foots. You can't use the same things with Kevin Rudd that you used for Julia Gillard. But he did continue to do it. He did continue to stop the boats even after the PNG solution was announced and the budget emergency after PFO was bought out. And I think that maybe he's still in that mindset now, but it ended up working for him. I was wrong. It was good that he kept going the way that he had been. But he's a prime minister now. He can't continue on slogans. He's going to have to actually get results, and it's going to be very interesting to see how he reacts when things start to blow up a bit.
Well, indeed. 10 to 10. This is Outsiders on Sunday Extra. Bridie Jabour, you just heard, and Monica Dux are your guests. And yes, in politics, things do just blow up.
All states are saying actually GST needs to go up. Now, whether the rate goes up or some of the exemptions are got rid of, that needs to happen.
The truth is the GST is not going to change, full stop, end of story.
And Bridie, there's an example of precisely what you're talking about. We saw the small crisis in Western Australia this week as a result of their credit downgrade from no less reputable body than I think it was Standard & Poor's that dropped an A off their grading. And suddenly we're talking about the GST. So there's a good example, I think, of how reality can come up to mug you in politics.
Well, Labor were trying to hammer this message before the election, and no one was really listening. They did try to come out quite strongly, I think, it was about the first week of the campaign, saying a coalition government will put up the GST, and it was reported on, but it didn't become a very strong issue, and Abbott was able to shut it down well, saying a comprehensive tax review isn't going to include one of our most major taxes, which I thought was a bit odd at the time. But as John Hewson would tell you, when it comes to GST, you can't have your cake and eat it too.
Very good. But this is the unfortunate thing here, Monica. I mean, there is scope clearly for a serious discussion about tax, and that should include the GST. I mean, we're being sold a pup if it doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, but tax is like such an awful word, isn't it? We all fear tax. I mean, I go cold sweat when I think about tax. And the GST in particular, I thought it was very amusing that Colin Barnett said that Australians will quite happily, you know, wear a 2.5% hike on the GST, that, you know, and yet we've come off the few years where the way that the mining tax and the carbon tax has been spoken of as this terrible beast, and to expect that every Australian would happily see this hike. I mean,
is a great big old tax, though. You see, it's not a great big new one. Which
and
is
that 50
difference.
Cents on my jar of Vegemite, actually, I think will matter. And look, I think someone in the unions came out this week saying that they're trying to lay the groundwork. If the states actually come on board and start putting pressure on bringing up the GST rate, it will make it a lot easier for Tony Abbott to do anything about
this. Well, the rhetoric seems to have shifted within the government from the position of it's not even going to be in the review to, well, of course it'll be in the review, but we won't do anything about it until next term.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me if they try and bring up this hike, but it is amusing to hear the way that the GST is.
But that's okay, isn't it, Bridie? Is that not a reasonable process to have a full consideration of taxation in this term of government and then have that put to the people at the next election and have a mandate for whatever changes might take place?
Oh, yeah, I think that's very reasonable. I actually think that is exactly what's going to happen. But people do freak out at the word tax. And Tony Abbott can't campaign for 3 years on this great big new tax and making tax into such an evil thing and then turn around and put up another major tax. I think it's going to be very difficult for him.
The Labor leadership, they're going to change it soon. We have the rather charming spectacle of Mrs. Shorten and Albanese
best friends
out on the stump, being with a lot of love in this contest.
There's so much love. I'm loving it, actually. I think it's a very smart move because it's a fantastic change of pace for the Labor Party. It does seem to be working. It's cleansing a lot of that nastiness that was coming out. But they're both bending over backwards. And there was to show how nice everyone is, there was a fantastic comment the other day. I think Bill Shorten was asked, when Jenny Macklin came out in support of Albanese and a journalist asked Bill Shorten how he felt about that, and he said, "I'm more concerned about her bronchitis." Labour. Yeah, it is. And, you know, good on him. I mean, it's very amusing, but at the same time, I think it really is re-engaging the Labour Party members in this process, and I think it will be a good thing.
I mean, it's a remarkable thing, isn't it, Bridie, that after a loss as they have had, and a loss that followed such a period of acrimony and infighting, the logical thing you would think to have happen would be for the party to completely tear itself apart. And yet here we have this, as Monica says, this spectacle of happy cooperation.
There's something delicious about it, isn't there? Having an election and then straight after a Labor loss, they have their own election where a Labor person has to win.
They also...
all shall have prizes.
Do you remember Tony Abbott in 2007 complaining about his mortgage? That he, you know, now he's in opposition, he wasn't earning as much money and it was all so hard. And I kind of think with what's happening now with the Labor Party, they're avoiding all that sookiness.
That, sadly, is all we are able to do this evening on Outsiders, this morning even. And we apologise for the absence of Judith Sloan, but we do welcome the presence of Bridie Jabbour and Monica Ducks.